passe un volant pas possible. Un artiste, super, encore un but sensationnel. That's a brilliant bit of follow-up play by Mahé. Oh my goodness me, what a shot.
Sagolsen. Sagolsen setter det hen. Han setter den. De I semifinale igjen.
Hello and welcome to the Uninformed Handball Hour, and we have a special bonus episode for you on women's handball. We did miss a morning club last week, so we felt guilty, and we wanted to bring you another podcast. There's a lot of talk on the women's side. The European Championship qualifiers took place last week. The Olympic qualifiers are coming up as well. So some big games on the international stage for women happening. It's Alex Kudash here, and I'm joined by Chris O'Reilly. How are you doing, Chris?
Good, Alex. And shocked by the big news coming out on both men's and women's handball in the last 24 hours. I think, you know, we were planning on doing a quick and dirty one, but it's turning into a full podcast here.
Yeah, speaking of dirty, we'll get right into it. And it's a little bit harsh. We don't know the full details yet, but on the men's side, there was some shocking news that came out from Magdeburg, shared officially by Magdeburg regarding Nicola Portner, who failed a drug test, apparently, with indications that some levels on that match doping test were above the average. And so Magdeburg released a statement outlining what had happened, and he followed up with a statement himself. But it's kind of a shocking one. Doping in handball hasn't really reared its head in the past, and it's one of the first times that we see a really major player coming out with a failed test. So just reading out Nicola Portner's statement. The Magdeburg statement was a little bit unclear, but Nicola Portner states that, unfortunately, I have to tell you the following. I've been informed that a competition control of mine appears to have an analytical result different from the norm, and therefore as a result, management procedure has been initiated. I am deeply shocked by the information. I am deeply sorry about the situation and will go out of my way to demonstrate that I have not violated anti-doping regulations and have always acted according to the values of the sport and will continue to do so. Please understand that I can't make any further statements about this at the moment. So kind of fairly clear statement from Nicola Portner there, leaning towards the kind of mistaken substance taken, potentially.
Hard to kind of predict at this point what it is, but, you know, when it comes to analytical results different from the norm, that's basically how you find out these things normally. So I think that itself is not that. It sounds a little bit like some kind of error might have come, but generally, that's how they figure out whether somebody has been, particularly blood doping, if your normal levels that are in your kind of blood passport are not what they should be. And so that seems to be what has happened there. At this point, very little we can say about it. It's good that he did come out with that statement as well, because as you mentioned, Magdeburg's was not super clear. It was also published in Volksstimme, a newspaper in Germany today, basically saying the same thing and quoting Nicola Portner is shocked. But with these things, usually there is a procedure with it, which includes like a B sample as well. And yeah, you just hope that, as you said, it is something like a tainted supplement or something that has accidentally been taken. Because for the most part, yeah, you can't imagine all the benefits that would come, particularly for a goalkeeper. I know the idea of doping in team sports is and the fact that it wouldn't be very useful is an outdated view, particularly with the stamina and recovery needed for these athletes. But goalkeeper, a position where maybe those benefits are not necessarily as strong as other positions on the court. Let's hope for the best in this regard, because although it's popped up in a few times in handball over the years, it's never been a major case, and this is a major case. Like, one of the high profile players in the world, a star, as Magdeburg won the Champions League last season, and he'll be missing out in the German Cup final for this weekend.
Yeah, that's a big news for Magdeburg. In terms of other doping cases within handball, we recently saw the Russia women's under-19s team being stripped of a gold medal in the under-19 World Championship due to doping. Yeah, I think the systemic doping in Russia has been well covered across all sports. The other big one, interesting one, is Mimi Kraus previously has got a suspension for, but he was missing for a test.
Missing drug test.
And then a month later was acquitted and could come back. So this is from 2014, where he was 31 years old at the time. Otherwise, not too much within the doping space in handball. I think the measures in handball are, you know, quite significant. They're on par with top sports. You do see players, and including us when we played for the Irish national team, there was times where we, you know, some of our players have ended up in the room following a game. So it is a
all negative, of course.
All negative,
all negative,
all negative, to be clear. Yeah, it's a shock. Yeah, Nicola Portner, great player, great guy as well. Goalkeeper, just I don't see the, you know, there's a lot of substances in this world, so very hard to tell. But we'll have to monitor that as it goes.
Yes.
But that's another kind of interesting story that's come out in the handball world.
And we're going to speak about another one shortly as well, which came out as we're recording on Wednesday night. Last night on the Olympic qualification tournaments, which, to be honest, in the build-up to it, I was trying to think, what could be the talking point here about this? A little bit of a danger of six European teams going through, a bit like the men's side. Could be a little bit anticlimactic. But that all changed as Great Britain were handed a wild card into the tournament. And I can't wait to get your views on this, Alex.
Before we get in, I had a fantastic transition for that story lined up and won't be able to use it now, but I will throw it out. Speaking of doping, a team that could really use some doping in their upcoming matches is the GB women's team, who are going to be playing against some of the top nations in the world. So
good. Well, no, maybe we'll use that after all. But before we get your take on that, Alex, I'm looking forward to hearing your views on it. We're going to hear from Alex Mayer, who's one of the new EHF commentators. Came through the female commentator program in the last year with the EHF. She was doing some EHF Euro 2024 qualifiers in recent weeks. And so we caught up with Alex. Alex, who's in Copenhagen at the time. I have to say, Alex, it felt like a blast from the past. Usually it was you in Copenhagen with a beer. This time it was Alex Mayer in Copenhagen with a beer having a chat about the women's qualifiers. So let's hear what she had to say. So we're used to having Alex Kulesh in Copenhagen, but we have Alex Mayer joining us from Copenhagen at the moment with a lovely beer in hand, a proper springtime in Denmark for you, Alex. How's it going?
I know. It's beautiful. The sun is out. Currently at the Carlsberg factory in their back garden, trying to find a little quiet spot hiding from my workmates. But it's not too bad.
Yeah, you're fresh from doing some commentary for the women's EHF Euro qualifiers. You've done a couple of games now. How is the new life as a commentator treating you?
Look, it's a lot of fun. You know, for me as a handball fan first, then handball player, then handball commentator, getting to see on the weekend, I saw Norway versus Switzerland, seeing the Norwegian team, the Norwegian women's team in the flesh. I had a little bit of a fangirl moment. Then I brought it down and became professional again, I like to think. But no, it's been really awesome. Still plenty of room for improvement, but you know, getting tips from the one and only Chris O'Reilly is not so bad.
When it comes to fangirling the players, I think we've all been there at some point. So let's talk about those qualifiers then. They just came to an end last week. And you were covering the Euro Cup game, but you had covered a qualification game before that. Netherlands, Czech Republic, right? You covered?
It was Netherlands, Czechia, which was pretty cool. I think, again, the Netherlands are one of those teams I've been watching growing up, you know, in my bedroom in New Zealand. So, again, seeing them in the flesh was crazy. But I think Czechia put up a good fight. It still wasn't really the tight scoreline we wanted. It was a home game in Prague. But I think still it was amazing seeing, you know, Markéta Jaroszabková live. You know, yes. She's got such an arm. So, yeah, a real asset to that team.
Well, you said it was close enough game in the end, that one, a one goal game. But that feeling of not really close games is, I think, one of the big takeaways from this whole qualification campaign. It's the first time that it's been expanded to have 24 teams qualify for the championship. And I think that is really reflected in the groups as well. I mean, we've had with the 24 teams qualifying, a couple of debutants in there in Faroe Islands and Turkey, and Portugal qualifying for the first time since 2008. I mean, in what you've been looking at in preparation for your games and kind of just following in general, what do you make of this this qualification campaign?
I mean, obviously, I think that we should do the expansion, you know, going up to the 24. I think it's awesome. You know, also coming from a developing handball nation myself, I mean, New Zealand's nowhere close to being in anything like the Euro qualifiers, but I think it's a cool opportunity. I do think that there is kind of a wider chasm, I guess you could say, between those really kind of top tier, maybe there's like the A tier and the B tier, but then that C tier or some of those that are making it in those kind of those extra four, for example, maybe even the extra eight, definitely there's a definite difference there. We're talking kind of like a 15 to 20 goal difference, but you know, maybe that's what they need to make up the difference. I don't know, what are your thoughts?
It's looking back at it now, I think the brutal thing with it is, like, you know, you see three teams or four teams that are qualified in third place from their groups, and with Turkey and Slovakia getting, they got a point against the top two teams, which generally has been enough in previous campaigns for teams to qualify. But seeing Portugal and Faroe Islands there as basically the teams that didn't get spanked as badly as everyone else is a little bit worrying in there. I mean, you have both of them with 0 points against the top two teams in their group and losing by an average of 7.5 goals per game suggests that maybe it has come a little too soon. And it's a funny thing with both the men's and women's World Championships and Euros that it feels like if they make the decision to do it on the men's side, then 4 years later, it has to come on the women's side. And you know, in comparison, I've said it on the podcast before with the Women's Football Euro, which has just begun their qualification campaign as well. They've done it in a slightly different way, where there will be more teams qualifying or more teams involved in the qualifying, but they have basically separated that A, that B, and that C tier that you mentioned before. And in the end, you will only have the weakest teams from the A tier facing the best teams from the B tier in a playoff to try and qualify. So it avoids the teams facing each other, where you could have, like in the case of France's group, where they hit that 50 goal mark. Three times it's too many, you might say.
and I think, you know, being from a country or being, you know, playing in a national team where we were getting spanked, kind of like France was spanking some of the people they've been playing against, those games aren't that fun for anyone, to be honest. You know, we're talking about, we want this experience. And I think there's something to be said for when it's a tight-ish game, but when, you know, people are winning by 20 plus goals, it's not fun for the people that are winning. It's certainly not fun for the people that are using. We want to be motivating these players in the more developing handball nations. And I'm just, I don't know. I'm going back and forth in it. I don't know what's right or what's wrong, but I don't think it's necessarily a motivating thing, and that kind of experience isn't the experience that those maybe C-tier teams need. We need to be putting them up against teams where they have a hope of winning. And I think what we saw in the men's qualifiers, there were a couple of upsets there. I don't think we got one upset in the women's qualifiers, and that's surprising and kind of disappointing.
And at least in terms of the teams that are qualified now, there's, you know, the positives that Turkey got that draw at home against Serbia, and they played pretty well at home against Montenegro, losing by only a couple of goals. Faroe Islands losing by just 4 at home to Sweden, even though it was basically a Swedish B team, and then losing 24-20 to Iceland. So they're not... Those two teams, for example, are not that far away. And Portugal as well have shown a little bit of improvement. So, yeah, in that sense, like, they won't be completely out of place having qualified for the tournament. And you feel like there are always going to be some one-sided games in the final tournament, but they won't be as poorly off. But you saw Norway against Switzerland as well. And that was, in the end, a little bit of a one-sided game, which wasn't, I guess, a surprise by any means, when you see Norway, a team that were, it seemed like a team full of players that were trying to basically fight for their positions for the Olympics as well. Not necessarily the first string, but still really impressive.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, they're not actually fighting to win. Not that they didn't put an effort, you know, but they're the, maybe the goal of the match as individuals was to go, I'm really good at my job and I can really contribute. I think especially looking in goal. Is it Marie? I've forgotten her surname.
Davidson.
Marie Davidson. Yeah. Amazing. She's an extremely good goalkeeper, but then she's up against Silje Solberg and Katrina Lund for the Olympics. And like, this is her time. And maybe if it had been Norway versus France, she might have not got that kind of game time. So I think that there is something to be said for those younger players actually getting a bit of game time who are in those A-tier teams, those players that are developing. They still get that opportunity to play at an international level and play with their teammates, but they actually get some game time, maybe taking the pressure off a little bit. So maybe there's something to be said for that. I think as well, you know, the game on the weekend, Switzerland versus Norway, the Swiss team, they were really enjoying it. Like, I think they probably at a certain point realized that a home win was off the cards, but it didn't stop them actually having a bit of fun. Like, we saw a great bit of interplay. Mia Emenecker on the right wing, she set up a couple, she executed one, and there was that amazing goal with Era Baumann, the 16-year-old Swiss left wing, which is just like, she was so chuffed. And so there's still like highlights of those games, even though Switzerland lost by, what was it, 21 goals.
Yeah, and the Swiss team, they showed us some really good stuff at the Euro as well last time around. And in pot two as well, the draw coming next week. So they, you know, they will have a chance to qualify from the group, particularly playing at home. And they'll be hoping for a favorable draw in that one. And I just want to ask you as well about the other thing that's coming up this weekend with the Olympic qualification tournaments, because you mentioned what it's like to be a big underdog in New Zealand playing in the Asian Championship. And it's a team that have been parachuted into the Olympic qualification tournaments on literally a day's notice.
A wild card.
Right,
crazy.
A wild card in Great Britain, which has gone into group one and taken Cameroon's place, the Cameroonian team in the end, according to the IHF, failing to comply with documentation required for visas to travel to Hungary. And with the Cameroon team, they've had their issues in the last few years with players also disappearing as soon as they've reached the tournament. We covered that in the podcast during the Women's World Championship. With a journalist in Cameroon. So they're out. And instead of picking a team that were probably next in line, and being some anger there from like the Romanians and the Croatians that they haven't got an opportunity, they've picked Great Britain, which you have some connection to now as you're living in London. But the British team available to hop in there, and they'll be facing Sweden, Hungary and Japan. And that, well, I think for both of us who've experienced being has severe underdogs in tournaments like this. This is something that I can't even fathom.
Yes. I mean, big news, amazing news for Great Britain handball, amazing news for England handball. I can say playing my club handball and beach club handball in the UK, I had met very few, I suppose, Great Britain born players, or even naturalized Great British players, so people that would be eligible to play for the Great British team in my games that I'm playing. So it's cool playing in the UK because it's such a cultural mixing pot. And across my team, we have about, I don't know, I think we've got like probably 12 different nationalities. So it's really exciting. But I mean, look, I don't know, I honestly don't know a lot about the Great British women's team. That's the fact of it. I'll try and find out some more for you, Chris. But
well, I know crazy some of the players, so also, that's fine.
Well, there you go. You know more than me. But exciting. But what a it's not a lot of time to prepare either.
No. So they were in a training camp last week in Portugal, and playing against club teams. And I think they're very much looking at a really long term progress. So this is a super young team they have. Mark Hawkins, who's taken over as the coach recently, is a great guy who has gone through the whole coaching system in Norway, and he was a player in the Olympics in 2012. He was assistant coach for China at a world championship, but I'm pretty sure this has come, I don't know, 15, 20 years ahead of schedule, if you imagine what the British Federation were expecting.
Yeah.
He says that they're, you know, they're grateful for the opportunity, and it is going to be an experience for them. But you have to wonder if it for the tournament was the right thing. I mean, let's just hope nobody gets hurt in the situation like this. Also for the teams they're playing against, it's going to be tough. Like this, you know, we talked about Turkey as a team that have snuck through in the qualification. They beat Great Britain by about 30 goals not so long ago. So that is it's a big,
that's what
big jump
with here. Yeah. And I think it's, you know, ultimately, whatever, we love handball and we want to see exciting handball. Exciting handball doesn't necessarily need to be the best of the best, even though that's always exciting, but it needs to be a good matchup, right? That's what makes a good game. That's what makes it exciting. It's not fun for the players, and it's not necessarily fun for us when we're seeing those games. And we don't want to make huge assumptions here, but at the same time, it gives Great Britain a very clear benchmark as to where they have to go and need to figure out how quickly they get there. But, you know, we know we might see a couple of stars come out. I think for them as well, maybe there are a few that are wanting to maybe play some club handball in Europe. Like, what better stage to set yourself up on? So it is still absolutely a cool opportunity, but maybe just a little bit early.
I just want to ask you about the second tournament as well in Olympic qualification, because it features two teams that you covered, Netherlands and Czechia. They'll be facing off against each other, Argentina and Spain, the home team. In that one, two teams go through there. Spain have the home advantage, but this Czech team have been quite impressive over the last few months. Do you reckon they could sneak in and get one of those two spots?
It's absolutely possible. But I think when I saw Netherlands and Czechia played, I think Czechia were playing, Czechia were playing out of their skin, and they had a really good game. I don't feel like Netherlands were working on full steam. I think that they were having a lot of fun and they were being really creative. I don't think that they were locked in, and I think that they were pretty secure in the win. It actually ended up being a very close game, but attitude-wise, if they were going full throttle like we know Netherlands can do, I think that they could. I would pick Netherlands. I'm not saying Czechia couldn't do it, but I think my picks would be Netherlands and Spain.
I would I'd agree with you. I have to say Netherlands and Spain in the top two there. We'll have to see. It's a tough, it looks like a tough weekend in terms of surprise teams getting through. And that is something we talked about after the men's qualification tournaments, where it was a clean sweep for the European teams as well. And you look at there's Japan will have an outside chance in their group. Argentina, hard to see. And Paraguay, no chance at all. So It could again be a clean sweep for the European teams, which is not necessarily what we want to see at Olympics, having 9 out of 12 teams coming from Europe.
No, but you never know. We could see it, but we want to expand the handball globe. And if we keep it all in Europe, keep all the good stuff in Europe, it's only good for Europe. And as us both well, I suppose you're a European, right?
Not in spirit, I would say, in the handball world. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But no, love it. Appreciate your time, Chris. Thanks
lovely.
For having me.
Enjoy the Carlsberg. Very jealous. And talk to you again soon, Alex. Thanks.
Amazing. Thanks, Chris. Bye. Take care.
So after your brilliant intro into the topic of Great Britain getting into the Olympic qualifiers through a wild card, I can't wait to hear your take on it, Alex. But before we get that, just like a bit more context for this, and we touched on it there with Alex Mayer earlier, but on Tuesday evening, the news came through that from the IHF that the national team of Cameroon, who we've spoken about a lot in recent months at the World Championship as well, failed to comply with documentation required for the visa to travel to Hungary in time to take part in the qualification tournament in Debrecen. Despite all efforts made by various bodies, they couldn't make it happen. And so the IHF tried to give the place to another African team. All of the teams they contacted couldn't confirm participation in time. And so the spot was open for a wild card. And of all the teams they possibly could have gone for in the world, they've gone for Great Britain, a team who only less than a year ago had to drop out of the EHF Euro, the aforementioned EHF Euro qualifiers, due to financial reasons. And I think also understanding that they were going to be in qualification tournament one or phase one instead of going straight through to the second phase, which they're expected to do. They knew they couldn't compete at that level and bowed out of it. But here they are now facing Sweden, Hungary, and Japan over the next 4 days. Incredible news. It feels like the beginning of a wacky teenager sport movie, but I fear there'll be no happy ending to this.
Yeah, I'm just trying to see if GB got a bunch of ringers recently, trying to check their team, if they, you know, they managed to recruit some top level players, because it's crazy. Like, of all teams, why GB? You know, if you look at the women's qualification tournament, it's really the top teams that are participating there. There's plenty of other options for kind of entrance. Like, you have, yeah, so the group is Sweden, Hungary, Great Britain now, and Japan, and Netherlands, Czech Republic, Argentina, and Spain, Germany, Montenegro, Slovenia, and Paraguay. So really, it's the top eight teams in Europe that are actually in this qualification tournament. Teams that aren't in it are Croatia, previous medalists at European Championships, Romania, Poland, Switzerland, Serbia, and North Macedonia. Those teams all available to play. I don't know why some of them might not just jump on the opportunity.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they would happily have jumped on. And, you know, on the next up list, so to speak, in terms of qualification, would have been Romania, Croatia, then Poland, in terms of their finishes at the World Championship from 2023. But the IHF actually go some way to explaining why they chose a team like this instead of another top-level European team. And I'll take you through the motivation, and then you can tell me what you think of that. So they discussed the limited options and decided to award the place under the light of development purposes in order to keep the competition as fair as possible. So the objective of the decision was to allow all teams a fair chance of having the same number of matches, first of all, and to find the best possible balance and provide the best chance of progression for all teams involved. So basically what that is telling me is that they wanted to find a team they knew would not finish in the top two. Because if you brought a team like Romania or Croatia in there, then they would be a serious competitor against the other three teams for a top two spot. They wanted to find a team that basically they're saying Cameroon wouldn't have had a chance. And so we want to find another team who don't have a chance.
Fair. But even then, GB, I'm surprised GB took the opportunity. They lost by 30 goals to Turkey in their last qualification match. And it's a team that's improving. You know, the GB Women's youth program has done so well to gather some very talented players. So you really have to respect GB for how they've grown. But it's just, they're going to be fed to the wolves. Not only that, they're thrown into the most difficult group of these qualifiers. Like, there's no team where they'll even have a 5-minute spell with. Like, we're talking pure demolition. And for GB to take it on, I think from Great Britain's perspective, it's a pretty good news story. It's a pretty good sales point. You know, Great Britain works on a... there's a lot of funding available to sports, but a lot of it is linked to the Olympics. So by saying that you've had a team compete in the Olympic qualifiers, you can probably wipe out the results from when you're submitting your funding application. But it's just...
We came this close. Only two teams away.
You know, you're in the top 8 teams of Europe to try qualify for Olympics. So in that way, yes, but... It just seems wild. We'll have to see the results, but this may be some of the most one-sided games we'll ever see, really. It's wild.
It is. You know, a year and a half ago or so, when they played against Turkey and lost those two games, one of them, as you said, almost by 30 goals, they had a different coach. Now Mark Hawkins is in, friend of the podcast. He's the head coach now. And there were a number of players then who I believe like purely didn't want to be a part of that squad because they didn't want to be playing under the previous coach, something we're not too unfamiliar with, Alex, from our past. But they have a very young team. And I know some of the players, there's nobody playing in a top level team. They're playing for academies in Denmark or in France or in Germany or in the UK. And it's maybe where the men's team was like 5 or 6 years ago. And, you know, there hasn't been a women's team. There wasn't a women's team for quite a while as well after the Olympics. So they've had to really start all over again while the, you know, in comparison, the British men's team managed to keep like hammering away and finding a way to compete. They've really had to start from zero a few years ago. So, yeah, I just full credit to Mark Hawkins and the gang. And, you know, I'm sure they will make the most of it. But also, as Alex Mayer said, you know, she's been involved, we've been involved in games where you are getting absolutely pummeled. And at a certain point, it's not fun. And at a certain point, it's not educational. And it can be really destructive as well to a team. So Alex said this does sets a benchmark for them to see where they are, where they have to go. But it could also show that they will never get to where they want to go in that sense, and could have an opposite impact on the team. Like Hungary at home, Japan, a super impressive team at the World Championship a few months ago, and Sweden, who are just not going to be messing around. You also have to wonder, like, for the three teams themselves, you know, the IHF said there about getting a fair playing field and having all three teams play against each other. You have to feel that's not the case. You know, Hungary get a walk over in the first game, Japan get a break in between the two big games that they're going to play.
You're exactly right there. So Sweden is the one team that gets punished by this, because they'll play their two big games back to back. while the others get some sort of rest in, because, you know, they're going to play there. I wonder if the other teams will even play any of their top stars, but they'll play the bottom of the bench and still come out on top. But anyway, good luck to the GB women's team. It's going to be an experience of a lifetime in front of a packed arena in Debrecen in Hungary. So, you know what? If it came our way, you wouldn't take it.
Would you say yes? I mean, I feel like this is a very equivalent situation. We could almost put ourselves in those shoes. Like, if we were offered an opportunity to play against Japan, Sweden and Hungary in an Olympic qualification tournament, I don't know if the entire squad would have said yes. I mean, a problem we always had, Alex, is that we were more intelligent people than we were handball players. I don't know if that wasn't always our strength, you know. I'll have a quick look at the groups then. I want to hear who do you think will buck those spots. Qualification tournament one, Sweden, Hungary, Japan. Which two teams are getting through?
I'd like Japan to get through, but being a Hungary home tournament, I think it will probably be Hungary and Sweden.
Right, Netherlands, Czech Republic, Argentina, Spain.
Oh, I like the luck of Czech Republic there. Netherlands to go through, and then, yeah, I think Czech Republic might ahead of Spain.
And then Germany, Montenegro, Slovenia, Paraguay.
That's a tough one. Probably Germany and Slovenia.
Good stuff. Thank you, Alex. And thank you all for listening. We'll catch you next week with another Morning Club. Goodbye.